Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the second regular session of the Fredericksburg City Council of February 2026. Glad you're here today. Would you please stand for the invocation delivered by City Resident Janice Smith and remain standing for the pledges. Thank you, Janice.
Good morning, everyone. Is this your first day in this chamber?
No, we're not in the new one yet.
Oh, this is not the new one. Okay. Would you bow with me, please? Father God, you are the Father and Creator of us all. And we thank you for the gifts that you have given these council members in leadership and in decision making. And Lord, I thank them this morning, and I thank you for all your blessings. I pray that decisions will be made and not divisions. In the name of the Father and my Lord Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
That is fact.
We have two ceremonial matters this morning. Very happy ones. First is the recognition of Evelyn Weinheimer's retirement and service to the Gillespie County Historical Society. I'm going to meet you, Evelyn, at the podium. Heather, and you and Jenny want to join? Well-known name around town, I'm sure, who is, well, we can't say replacing, but she's stepping into the role that Evelyn has held. Evelyn, it is my pleasure today. It's just a small piece of paper and folder to represent decades of work on behalf of Fredericksburg, the Western County, keeping our heritage alive, and actually being one of those people who everybody, when you have a question about the former family or things that went on in town, well, you talk to Evelyn Weinheimer. I had the privilege of working with Evelyn at the Pioneer Museum Historical Society for 6 years, and I can tell you, this is a lovely woman who loves sharing heritage. She loves telling people about it. She is diligent in finding those facts that nobody else can find. She's just a real community treasure, and it is well and truly deserved that you step away, but we know your phone number. Evelyn Weinheimer, the City of Fredericksburg extends sincere appreciation for your devoted service and sharing and preserving Fredericksburg's story through the many years of Gillespie County Historical Society. Your commitment has brought the history of our community people, places, and to thousands, ensuring that the unique heritage and heritage of Fredericksburg will be cherished for generations to come. Congratulations.
And I've thoroughly enjoyed what I've been doing for the number of years. And people keep going, well, you know what? When I was a little girl, I sat and listened to grandparents and parents, and it just kind of stuck. So that's where I'm at.
Thank you again. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
All right, so
I'm here today to provide some recognition for some of our partners who are absolutely key in emergency management. Most of y'all know me. I'm Ashley Morris. I'm the emergency management coordinator for Gillespie County and the city of Fredericksburg. And we've been here a couple of times to talk a little bit about the ice response and the ice storm and some of the work that we've done. Today, as an emergency manager, again, I preach on how important community partnerships are and how we really honestly cannot do successful disaster preparedness, response, and recovery for our community without essential community partnerships and folks who step up to really want to help during that time. And so I want to go ahead and call up the American Red Cross Hill Country Chapter, as well as the Fredericksburg United Methodist Church. Come ahead and stand up here. And again, just to give a little background, we were working for days before the ice storm, coordinating, talking about mass care and sheltering. Many of y'all were here during the 2021 ice storm, and so we know how important sheltering was and taking the steps to be prepared for that. And so these folks stepped up. They all were part of the planning process before the storm, and then during the storm, we were actually able to stand up a shelter at the church. And we were able to assist four travelers in the area who were not able to make it on I-10 because it was closed, as well as provide services for folks who would have needed it. And so, again, I just want to thank y'all so much for your partnership. We can't keep the community safe without your guys' willingness to step up. So thank you so much. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Ashley, and thank you, recipients, for being here. It's our pleasure to present those honors today. Council comment?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. On the third evening of the third, I attended the first session of this year's Citizens University. On the fourth, I attended a Zoom with CVB Search Committee. As I reported last meeting, there were 12 applicants. We've whittled that down to four, and we're going to be doing Zoom interviews tomorrow and Thursday with those four candidates. And then on the 13th, I attended emergency management training that Ashley put on at the EOC. That's all.
I attended the Commissioner's Court meeting, which they had two in a row. One was the week when we were actually meeting two. If you probably read, the city or the county is being sued by the group out of Harper that's trying to do the battery deal. Not sure what the update on is, but they have filed a countersuit. They are doing some work. I know particularly out on areas that they're doing some road work, which is unusual this time of the year, but they're doing prep work. So in case you see any of that. One thing I want to mention, and I think we forget quite often, J. Hardin Perry died. J. Hardin Perry was a city councilman. In fact, I've been told that he was one of the persons instrumental in getting Martin Plot started. So I'm not sure, maybe Bobby served. Gerald, you may have served with him because you've been around a few times. But anyway, we want to honor him for the time he spent. And of course, if most of and Evelyn would know that Dr. Perry was his father. So it's important that we recognize those people that have done something to this community.
Good morning. Today is the first day of early voting, not for city or ISD, but for county and state and federal. And you can go to GillespieCounty.gov, their new website. And over on the right side, there's election information and everything is there. I also attended Citizen University with Todd and Bobby, and a great class. I'm really excited about what they're going to learn and what their project is going to be. FISD's bond election has been slated for May. It'll be $160 million. I'll have more information on that as it affects us city taxpayers. And last thing, I just wanted to give a shout out. Cross Mountain Park, if you haven't been out there recently, please take a trip. The Nimitz Rotary helped fund a rail and helped increase the sturdiness of the trail all the way up. And Native Plant Society of Texas has also done some beautiful displays. And so it's educational and fun. And with it not being dusty at the moment, go today. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I also attended the Citizen University, as they all said. On February the 9th, I attended my first Parks Foundation board meeting. I was elected to the board. When Emily stepped down, I was able to join. I'm excited about that. Today, I also have an airport board meeting. I don't have any updates on the airport, but it is extremely busy still, and I do know they've had records and fuel sales. So that's today at 1. And then on Friday, I have an EDC board meeting. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Council. We'll move on now to the consent agenda item, which is one item. It's the minutes of the last regular session on February 3rd.
Make a motion, we approve.
Second.
Motion second to approve is presented. Further questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We now go to the ordinance resolutions and public hearings. First one is request Z-2522 by Judy K. Feller to consider the following: a zoning change from single family to commercial C2 for property located at 707 Milam. Do we have a applicant presentation, Cliff?
I do not see the applicant in the audience, so okay. I'll take it from a staff standpoint.
We'll right.
Go from there.
Thank you.
So as you indicated, and it's on the agenda, and good morning to you, Mayor and City Council, and thank you. This is a request by Judy K. Feller, request Z-2522, to consider a rezoning request from single-family residential R1 to C2 commercial for the property located at 707 North Milam. As you see in your staff report, the applicant had originally submitted two requests. They had requested a request for a land use change and then the zoning change for 4.49 acre tract at 707 North Milam. They were originally requesting a land use change from commercial to a general commercial land use, and then ultimately the rezoning request from the R1 to the C2. As you know, we adopted the comprehensive plan in 2024, and as identified in your staff report, I believe page 6, of your staff report. The current place type identified in the comprehensive plan is a mixed-use community corridor place type, which identifies the appropriate zoning districts as R2, R3, R5, neighborhood commercial, M3, MU1, and MU2. Where I'm going with that is a neighborhood commercial C1 or a commercial C2 underlying zoning district is appropriate in accordance to your newly adopted comprehensive plan. So when considering this request at the Planning and Zoning Commission, they considered various factors such as that place type designation or that land use designation and the trend of development throughout the area. And as you see on the map up there, this property is actually located, I guess that would be the southeast corner of that intersection, and is surrounded by R1 underlying zoning. As you get on the northwest side, you have a string of C1 commercial zoning going up that entire block. And then as you go further down, a couple blocks down, you have a trend of C1 commercial zoning along the corridor. When considering this request, the Planning and Zoning Commission factored that land use or place type designation, but also looked at the trend of development in the zoning and felt like that this request could create a scenario of spot zoning. So based upon that, their recommendation was to deny the request based upon the concern that this would create a pattern of spot zoning within that block and throughout that area. So based upon that, the recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission was to deny the request. Therefore, you as a council, you would have to have a supermajority vote of 4-1 to approve the request at this time. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
All right. We'll hold questions maybe until after the public hearing.
Yeah, I'd open it up for the public hearing because this is the second public.
We get back to my agenda item here. All right. Open a public hearing on this item. Anybody here speak on this? Going once? No one.
There's the protest letter.
Sorry? No. All right. I'll close the public hearing. Council, do you have any questions of Cliff or discussion on this item?
Is that a house historical or something of that nature? Because that was Dr. Springall's house, which is a long time decision.
I think it is within the historic district, but not within the historic shopping overlay district. But I always caution when we look at a property from a historical significance standpoint, those are two different things that we should always factor. Historic preservation does not dictate use, and the underlying zoning is what dictates the use. So we always have, where I'm going with that is we always have that option. If there's a change in the structure itself, regardless of the use, it still is under historical consideration, but it doesn't drive the use itself.
Why the jump to C2 instead of C1, given the other C1 properties along?
So I think that's the applicant, I think, is, and this is the case in any rezoning case. And as a staff, we always talk about this if we see the findings that could accommodate an underlying zoning. And the fact that the place type does identify the commercial as an appropriate zoning classification, that carries over to the ability to get a C2 zoning right at that point. So long story short, we always recommend the highest and best use option. But then we look at the findings of fact as we go and try to bring it back. The original recommendation of staff was that we were not opposed to the C1. We were vehemently opposed to a C2. So we would have been comfortable with the C1 at the very least. This is just one of those unique situations where your comprehensive plan and your new identified land use has kind of a transitional area, I guess is the best way to put it, a high traffic volume area. That's why we always encourage them to look at the findings of fact. And I think the Planning and Zoning Commission, and considering all those factors, felt like there just wasn't enough commercial activity along that stretch to justify any commercial zone at that point.
So, Cliff, how do we balance the fact that it actually is allowed in our comp plan? But yet planning and zoning identify as possible spot zoning?
So I think that's going back to that commitment of findings of fact, and as a staff and as we move forward, and I know this is a common trend, I think in our UDC, when we consider future cases, we need to reinforce the commitment to that finding of fact and set those standards in the precedent at the time we adopt that code. I guess where I'm going is it's just been a little bit site by site, which I understand each site has its own characteristics. As strange as this sounds, I think as a staff, we need to almost present with any individual case some sort of rating or scoring system for each request that sets a threshold based upon that. And I think that makes us more consistent. Something that can be cleaned up in the UDC, but right now it's a little bit of a disconnect now. We can also look at as we move forward and identifying those that criteria in the strategic plan as a staff responsibility as we move forward. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions or Cliff? applicant's rationale or the request, they cannot be an STR because of our new ordinance of 2-3 years ago, that there are no more new or STRs in R1.
Well, it is an STR now, isn't it?
Is it an STR now?
My understanding is no.
She used to have a long-term rental.
I think it's a long-term rental, and then the STR with the less than 30 days has created a scenario. I mean, theoretically, they could rent it as a short-term. But be careful saying that. As a rental unit that doesn't meet the STR requirements, but that's also something that needs to be addressed in the UDC. But my understanding is no, this is no sort of STR. And I don't even believe it is eligible because I don't think 50% of the properties within the 200-foot buffer are STRs within right. that district.
Okay. And have been for sale for some time.
And the other is that Milan is continuing to be busy. Traffic is heavy. That's mitigating her opportunity to leverage this.
Yeah, I think that's a problem that they're running into. We're hearing that high traffic volume area, more accommodating to commercial development. That's why I think the C1 we were a little more comfortable with, because the C1 accommodates more your office type of uses, which are most likely operating between 8 and 5. And if there is a development that comes in from a commercial standpoint, it most likely is not going to increase the traffic volume that's already there. Where a C2, yeah, it's a little more service-oriented with drive-throughs and things like that could have increased that volume. So I think that's why we were a little more comfortable with kind of the middle ground of the C1 as a staff at that point.
It's an R2 right now?
R1.
R1?
Single family.
So can you recommend back to them to say, we'll approve you for C1?
Well, theoretically, you as a council can kick it back to the PNZ for reconsideration. I think their concern, and this is why this could be an issue, is you just don't want to set a precedent of allowing for spot zoning. So if this is something that you're going to overturn, so to speak, or give it a C1, I would just reinforce that you make some sort of finding in why you did it, so you're just not doing it. So you have justification for an individual property or situation. Along Milam here, obviously one of the characteristics is you have a lot more traffic than what you would two blocks back. And if someone came in and made a similar request, you would have some ground to say, this was unique to this, but not unique to you. So, Tony, the short answer is yes, you can kick it back. They can reconsider it. The other option is to, because they're just making a recommendation to you, is to make your, approval or denial. But with this, you would have to have a supermajority because of the denial request. A recommendation of the PNZ.
This is a little tricky for me because, I mean, to go from R1 to C2, like C2 is a gas station. That's a bit much for this area. I get that Milam is busy. I would be more comfortable with the C1 given that 402, I mean, that's catty corner. That's close and that's more more aligned and more on the 8-to-5 model of business. Unless it becomes an STR, which it could be by right if it's commercial. So,
I'm having trouble wrapping my head around why this would be spot zoning when you have C1, the two blocks to the north, and then you have the whole area just south of that. Is spot zoning based on just the block, or is it the 200 radius?
Well, in the planning and zoning world, there's really not a definition that I'm aware of, as crazy as that sounds, of spot zoning. It's really dictated in the consideration. That's why the findings of fact are here. And to the PNZ, I guess where I'm going, Is it spot zoning? If you are saying, well, our new comprehensive plan says this is an appropriate underlying zoning district, then no, it's not, right? That's why the findings of fact and the various factors, is it consistent with your comprehensive plan? Yes, because the place type allows for it. Is it consistent with the trend of development? That's a little more gray. Yes or no, you have commercial to the north, and then you go a couple blocks down. Yes, you have additional commercial, but throughout the existing block, you have residential and behind it. This is what I'm going to advise as a professional planner. That is obviously a corridor that has drawn some thought in terms of allowing or accommodating commercial zoning, because your place type says that is an eligible or an appropriate underlying zoning district. If this was one block back, I'd say heck no, because you can't protect the residential integrity of that neighborhood behind it. It's a transitional area, and that's what it is. And C2, I think, is a little overkill. C1, I think, is more appropriate. That's why we recommended it as an alternate. So, Bobby, I would say you're not creating a pattern spot zoning here.
Okay, thank you. But what's before us is to go from R1 to C2.
It is C2, but you as a council, you're only accepting a recommendation. You have the right to approve an alternate underlying zoning district at this point.
I see. Okay. Mick, do we need to act on the C2 if that were the council's wish to deny the provision? We have to take action on that, and then another one to make.
No, you can do it all in one act.
Somebody want to move it?
I move we deny the C2. And come and offer a C1 rating on that piece of property.
Second.
All right, a motion and a second to deny the C2 designation as requested, but to approve a C1 alternative.
Kind of a funny motion. Do we need to amend that motion to say, I alter request D2522 to be C1?
Instead of C2, yeah, and it's actually request Z. 2522.
Well, the reason I've stated it that way is because that takes into account what PNC did. They denied, we approve the denial, but offer another time. So do you want to alter the motion?
I so alter the motion to go from a deny the C2 request, which no. PNC or
I think just we're getting a little tripped up on deny. We're not trying to deny this. We're trying to approve it as a C1 property. Is that fair?
Well, that's fair, and that's okay. What's the intent.
All right. State the motion the way you want to.
Make a motion. We approve Z2522-2522. Approve it as a C1.
Second.
All right. So the motion, as I understand it now, is to approve the change from R1 to C1. Any further questions or discussion? All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Cliff.
Is that clear, Cliff?
That's perfect.
Thank you. Is that motion, by the way, just curiosity, Meg, is that incumbent on the applicant then to accept that?
No, sir.
Okay.
You're the final authority.
Okay. Perfect. The next one is request Z7B. Request Z2523 by P.B. McMahon and New Vista Del Valle to consider a CUP for a townhome used for property located at 1032 South Mila. Again, we start with the applicant?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. McMahon?
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is P.V. McMahon, Jr. I'm the original developer of Keller Oaks and Director of Operations for New Vista Development LLC, current owner and developer of Keller Oaks. I come before you this morning to once again present New Vista's request for approval of our new application for conditional use permit to allow New Vista to develop 4.87 acre portion of our 14.25 acres on the south side of Keller Hill with lots for 19 exclusive luxury townhomes. Inasmuch as our previous applications had met with objections that were seemingly primarily relative to granting approval of 277-foot extension of our cul-de-sac, Crestview Circle. Now, I have redesigned the project to shorten Crestview Circle to a total length of 495 feet, which is 5 feet less than the standard 5-foot length as stipulated in the code. In addition, I'm in receipt of a list of additional conditions that the Windcrest Patio Homeowners Association submitted to Mr. Cross. This list of requested conditions seems curious in as much as this application is relative primarily to the proposed lot 101A that adjoins the Windcrest townhome area. This does not impact Windcrest patio home sections, it seems. Nevertheless, I'm sure that you've seen their requested list of conditions. Most of these conditions seem reasonable. However, New Vista cannot be limited as to how many townhomes must be built beyond what is required by the code, nor how many can be built, what can be sold, when they can be sold, or what might be pre-sold. Also, New Vista financials are private. I thank you for allowing me to present this new application this morning, and I hope and pray that you will look forward or favorably on New Vista's revised development plan and grant us your approval. Again, I thank you so very much, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. There may be some questions following public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cliff?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. So I know you're all very familiar with this site, and as Mr. McMinn had indicated, this is a conditional use permit, and it's technically a new request for the 4.87 acre site within the existing 14.5 acre development or site that was proposed originally. It's specifically associated with the newly defined lot 1R1A, which is the 4.87 acre tract. So if you recall, the original request came to you on the original 14 acres. It consisted of a condominium development, a couple professional office buildings, and 21 townhomes along a 750-foot cul-de-sac, which was the major concern at that point because it exceeded the 500-foot linear max for subdivision developments on cul-de-sac streets. I believe that was the original concern as part of that request. So what Mr. McMinn has done, he's come back before the PNZ requesting a new conditional use permit for the 4.87 acre tract that would accommodate 19 townhomes on a roughly 495-foot linear foot cul-de-sac at that point, which is now within your subdivision requirements to create that. In evaluating the request, the staff looked at all the specifics that ranged from the building coverage requirements, and as identified in your staff report, the building coverage requirements of 43% is well within the 55% maximum allowed for the development. The impervious coverage proposes a 55% impervious surface ratio, which is well within the 70% maximum. The proposed height are one story at 16 foot, basically to the front. The back could come up to two stories or 32 feet, which for each of the individual townhomes, which is well within the three-story 38-foot max. The access would be for the newly created lot 1R1A would be based upon the Crestview Circle that's created off of the entrance point. There, at that point, there would be two spaces per unit is required. Each unit has four spaces on site. I think Mr. McMahon has proposed to have some additional on-street parking to accommodate guests. So long story short, he meets the requirement of parking in that he will have 76 spaces to accommodate the development. Landscape and screening per section 7.920 was met in terms of that there would be one tree per 75 linear feet of required frontage, and he meets the requirements. So as Mr. McMahon, I think what you, what I really would like to focus on, Mr. McMahon had indicated the conditions that were brought to the PNZ from the Windcrest patio home folks, and those conditions were primarily, and I'll find them here, focused on what they would like to see incorporated as a condition of the conditional use permit. And those conditions were originally identified to require a 20-foot wide buffer, which is identified in the site plan here, require an easement for maintenance of the retaining wall, which Mr. McMahon has agreed to and is on record as part of the PNZ case. Another condition was to require construction work day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Staff had no objection to incorporating that, nor did the applicant, because that's already required by our code. So it's a little bit overkill, but no issue with incorporating it into the conditions. I think another big one was that the Patio Home Association and the neighbors requested that staff have a say in what trees will be preserved as the final development. Have no objection to that, and it makes sense because we've talked about a newly adopted tree preservation ordinance. So this is obviously something we're going to do in the future, and it makes sense to do it now. And I don't think Mr. McMahon had a problem with that as well. The issue that he mentioned about the require the completion of the first block of six luxury townhomes before attempting to sell the others, staff does agree with Mr. McMahon that that should not be a condition. And the reason I say that is because that ties into the financial request, which we don't ask for anybody else, so we shouldn't ask for that here as well. But if the concern is that he can financially perform on this, then you don't want him doing it in multiple phases because it requires multiple staging. It's cheaper to do it all at once than to stage the project. So we felt like that the performance is going to be noted and be most important when you build the cul-de-sac and the infrastructure to accommodate the townhomes, which the number of homes that are being built and sold at that time has no impact on that. We want him to perform at the time of construction of the subdivision. One additional thing that we did incorporate in there is that staff would like to see a 90-day period to provide the plat and get the plat approved, which requires a 90-day plat submittal timeline. So based upon that, the staff had originally been comfortable with the approval of the CUP based on the 20-foot wide buffer, the requirement of the easement for the maintenance of the retaining wall, require the construction for the workday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., having the opportunity to have a say on which trees will be preserved as part of the process, and the 90-day plat submittal timeline. Now, as you know and identified in your staff report, the Planning and Zoning Commission did not come to a recommendation for this individual request. And so based upon that, there was no formal recommendation that was provided by the PNZ. So this is being presented to you with no recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission, and staff reviewed section 5.480 of the code in terms of the protest provisions, which specifically states that if the Planning and Zoning Commission has not recommended approval of the conditional use permit request, then it does require a supermajority vote of you. That was the biggest question that we had coming out of that, because there was no recommendation of approval or denial. I've seen it where if you get neither, then just a majority vote would suffice. But in this case, the way the provisions of your code is written, you need a 4-1 vote to approve this. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have at this point.
Thank you, Cliff. That was very thorough. I appreciate it. I'm curious, though. I understood that the vote was to deny 3-2 at PNZ. Is that not right?
So the original motion was to approve the request subject to the conditions, and it did not carry based upon a non-majority vote. Staff then did advise, would you want to make a recommendation of denial based upon the inability to cover it? And the Planning and Zoning Commission chose not to at that time.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll go into a public hearing on this. I have some people signed up, but since it is a stated public hearing in the agenda, then it is open to anybody present. But I'll call on those people who signed up first, Tim Dooley, followed by Marlene Pilot. You have objection, Marlene? Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, council members. You've all seen me a number of times. I'm Marlene Pilot, and I'm president of the Patio Homes Association, and we do have property in this affected area. We have a residential property that's affected, as well as what is commonly known as an easement. It does belong to the Patio Homes Association. We pay property tax on it, so it is ours, and so that's why we're standing up for this. After 5 years of negotiating with Mr. McMinn and the city, we feel the recent plan is the best plan that we have seen, and it can be a benefit to all concerned. We urge you to vote in favor of this plan. The conditions our association have requested to be added to the conditional use permit enable us to feel confident that this project will enhance our neighborhood as well as that area of the city. We were never against townhomes. We were concerned that they be an appropriate addition to the city and would not compromise our way of life. Trust remains an issue for obvious reasons. We rely on the city to monitor construction to make sure that this project is constructed as presented. We have worked in good faith with Mr. McMinn and the city, and therefore we expect that faith to be respected and reciprocated. And once again, I thank you for the opportunity to address you. Yes,
Marlene,
sir.
For the record, are you recommending approval as a private landowner in the affected
as
area,
president
as
of the,
well
of,
as the association?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Dooley.
Morning, Council. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning on this issue. I just wanted to come and comment publicly that I appreciate the fact that Mr. McMinn has taken the time, which is quite a while, to come to a resolution on this issue that is fair to all. He has compromised, the neighborhood has compromised, planning and zoning has been, in my view, has been particularly interested in protecting the neighborhood as they went through the process, because there were things that the homeowners were asking that was not being followed from one iteration to the next. And I want to thank Mr. McMinn for listening to us, listening to the neighbors, and coming up with a reasonable solution to this problem. Thank you.
Tim, may I ask you why the city PNZ took the action it did or did not?
On the last vote?
And speak for yourself, yeah.
Oh, on the last vote? Mayor, if you pay attention, we had a very unique situation at our last planning and zoning meeting. There are 9 members of the board on the Planning and Zoning Commission. 2 of our members had to recuse because they had direct conflict with the project. We also had 2 members of our group who were not there. So we've got 5 people on our Planning and Zoning Commission, okay? So the way it worked, Mr. Musselman was chair that evening, so because Ms. Menking was the chair that had to step aside. So Mr. Musselman, as chair, called for the vote, called for a motion. Cricket. Nobody said anything. So finally, or not finally, but I made a motion to approve the project as presented. Get it on the table. Whoever wants to vote for it can. When the vote came, I voted against it, and two other members voted against it as well. So it was 3 against the motion and 2 for.
And you were absent, several people, plus recusing.
Yes, okay. So we were down to 5 members as opposed to 9.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate that explanation. All right, anyone else here to speak on this issue? The public hearing is still open. Morning, Jim.
My name is Jim Wilhite. My wife and I are residents of both the Windcrest patio homes and the Windcrest townhomes. I'm on the board of Windcrest patio. I've been involved with this project since it started. January 2020 was when I first met with Mr. McMinn and Mr. Kusenberger. I came here prepared to request a postponement. However, I'm going to try to be a team player and go with my president on this and not do that. But I would like to point out that in the list that Mr. Cross read, it was from a list dated 21 January, I think, of this year.
Yes.
And at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting 2 weeks ago, which was very interesting, there was an intense discussion, short but intense, regarding sidewalks. And there's nothing in these conditions regarding sidewalks. And I believe that there was an agreement led by Mr. Frenwelge to require sidewalks in front of the townhomes.
There was discussion, if I recall, about the sidewalks being there. And I think the comment of staff was that so when you look at the comprehensive plan and sidewalk connection and pedestrian access, it really talks about the ability to have sidewalks connecting neighborhoods, so to speak, right? And the discussion was that as part of the development of each of the townhomes, Mr. McMinn could incorporate sidewalks along the front of each of the 19 townhomes across the street. Did not really make sense, but then to stop that access point at the beginning of the cul-de-sac, and then any future development as part of the site plan, we would want to require interconnectivity of sidewalks to bring it all the way down to Keller Crossing at that point for interconnectivity. So I think Mr. McMinn was committed to incorporating the sidewalks as part of the development. He could obviously answer that question, but that is a valid request and a condition that could be incorporated into this development. And would highly encourage that if that's where we want to go, because as you know, multifamily developments less than 5 are not subject to site plan approval or further consideration.
I'm not familiar with that rule, but I do agree that Mr. McMinn committed to the concept, and Mr. Frenwelge was pretty insistent that it be included, but it wasn't actually included. And my experience with this project is if it's not in writing, it's not going to happen.
True. If you want to double down on it, I would definitely add that as a condition.
Okay. The reason that I was here to request a postponement is I really do not understand how the Planning and Zoning Department could agree that when you expand this project into the rest of the property that is owned by these developers to include another 100 or so apartments, that one little street exiting onto Highway 16 is going to be sufficient. There's no other exit or entrance. It's a landlocked property. And there's a new middle school across the street from it. The high school is probably going to expand. The hospital could probably expand. This is an area that's destined for a traffic problem. And it's not in any of these reports.
Jim, you do understand, as if I'm wrong, correct me. You do understand that what's before us is this particular project.
I understand.
And that any new project following, we'll have to go through a rigorous process.
I understand. Okay. But it just seems to me like once you get to that point where you are considering it, you're going to say, well, what are we going to do now? And we end up with 19 townhomes in the middle of a destroyed forest.
Okay.
Thank you very
much. Thank you. Cliff, are sidewalks part of the routine requirements of a development like this?
Yeah, you have areas that have a sidewalk plan that require certain sidewalks. I think the biggest issue here is that traditionally when we look at sidewalks as part of a larger site plan review process, and when that gets kicked into play, our ordinance requires that when you have commercial developments within a C2 underlying zoning district, for example, that's on a tract that's more than an acre. But it does specifically call out multifamilies, and multifamilies are not required to go through that process and subject to the further evaluation of internal sidewalks unless it's more than five units. Where I'm going with that, and this is to the point about further development, the protection becomes if you build apartments, even though it's a permitted by right use, any future apartments here are going to be subject to requiring some sort of sidewalk review as part of that condition. Short answer is sidewalks technically with this particular development, because they're individual sites, is a site by site at that point. And I would encourage Mr. McMahon and the council, I have no objection to it, and I don't think he has a problem with it. You don't want lot 12 to have a sidewalk to nowhere. Either build them or you don't. Is kind of where I'm going with that. And I don't think it's an unreasonable ask to require sidewalks to be incorporated into the curb cuts of each and the individual lots along that 495 feet to get it to the connecting.
Anyone else before I close the hearing? Yeah. Well, hello, Ron. I haven't seen you in a while.
My name is Ron Wilhoff. I live up on Windcrest, and I'm the board of directors of the Windcrest Townhome Association. And we do not oppose the request, but we do want to have their conditions requested by townhomes, including sidewalk, be approved.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, I'll close the public hearing. Council? Questions, comments?
I guess we want to ask Mike McMahon, what do you have to say about sidewalks?
My vision is to have the, use an old well-worn term, I want classy established development that we can put on that hill. Now, our original proposal back in 2021 was approved with the requirement that we had sidewalks. And quite frankly, we always intended to have sidewalks. And the construction plan, the civil construction plans that were approved shortly after the approval of our application in 2021 incorporated sidewalks. So it's always been our intention to have sidewalks. And we intend to run them across the front of the townhomes and all along the east right away of Helen Boulevard, all the way down to Press Reserve. So.
So my question is, would requiring sidewalks be a unique request of an applicant on this project?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm certainly not opposed to that, because we intend that anyway.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. McMahon while he's, up? Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Go ahead.
I'll take discussion or a motion.
I'm ready for a motion if no one else has discussion.
You want to do it? Do you have the list?
Got it.
Go for it.
make a motion to approve request number Z2523 for the New Vista development at 1032 South Milam with the five conditions as listed in Exhibit B in our packet, along with the sixth condition of sidewalks as discussed.
Let me just ask a question on that. Does that requirement also that he only does five at a time, or was that to go away with, go full?
So the original conditions that were in your original, in the original staff report identified that, but if you look at the Exhibit B, that is not incorporated within it. So, okay.
I'm sorry, did you add the 90-day flat?
Yes, Exhibit B has five conditions. Yes, and adding a sixth as sidewalks as discussed.
If I could, Todd, I'd like to recommend a third-party inspection on this project.
So aren't all commercial projects third-party by ATS?
So yes and no, depending on the... the third-party inspection is already verifying what's already required by code, so... To add a third-party inspection really adds no additional confirmation of meeting the code, because most third-party inspections are based on administrative review and approval. In other words, it meets all the engineering requirements, all the planning. When a permit comes in, it meets all the building code requirements. Our code inspector, our building inspectors and our third-party inspectors are looking for the same thing. We will take a look at it, but by the time this is built, there may be an option. We have ATS that does some third-party inspections for those unique situations. And if we as a staff determine it needs that third-party inspection, we can still do that administratively, but it really carries no further weight. That's an internal call at that point.
Well, I will second your motion, Todd.
It's been seconded already.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have stated motion and seconded. You want to make any alterations based on the recommendation? All right. Motion and second as stated. Any further discussion or questions on the motion?
Todd, does your list of recommendations include the required completion of the first block of six townhomes?
No, that goes back to the financial aspect that Cliff said that we are not.
And that's not in the conditions that have been bought by the city. Those are recommendations.
Can you list those five?
Sure. You want me to?
Please.
So in Exhibit B attached to the draft ordinance, and we've started to use ordinances as part of the CUPs, I think the Exhibit B and the conditions are, one, require a 20-foot wide buffer zone between the New Vista Keller Oaks project on the one hand and the properties of the Windcrest townhomes on the other hand. That was a condition that was sent to them. Sent by them as part of their original request. It's already shown in there. It's doubled down. It's recorded in the resubmitted site plan. So it's all in there by default, but we've added it. Require an easement for the maintenance and repair of the retaining wall of the Windcrest townhomes. We will require that as part of the platting, make sure there's an easement access if they ever have to get back and do work on that wall. Three, require construction work day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Four was to allow the city to have the say in which trees will be preserved, either through removal to another location on Keller Oaks or where they stood originally. In other words, even if there's a newly adopted tree preservation ordinance, we'll still have the option, and the applicant is committed to allowing us for replacement and moving of trees. In other words, you're going to have the same number of trees there when you're done with the project as opposed to when you start. And I think the applicant was happy with that because it allows for unique situations if you have to relocate a tree. And then the 90-day plat submittal time frame was also incorporated. And then I think the sixth condition that you had indicated was for the inclusion of the sidewalks.
Correct.
All right. Any further questions on the motion and the second? The motion that has been seconded. Since this needs to be a supermajority, we'll have a roll call.
Aye.
Aye.
Letty.
Councilmember Watson.
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Kirchner?
Aye.
Mayor Hoover?
Aye.
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
And Councilmember Edson?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Council. Thank you, folks who have shown up to state your views, and you have lots at stake here, I know, as does the applicant. So we're all hopeful that this will move forward in good order, and at some point people will say, what a good decision. Thank you. If you'd like to get on about your day, I'll pause for just a few seconds. All right, we're now at 7C, is that where we are? 2602, proposed text amendments for the zoning code regarding the reapplication timeline for zoning amendments and CUPs. The proposed text amendments are for section 5.270, for those of you who are going to look it up, and 5.470, action by the city council. Cliff?
Yes, thank you, sir. As you know, some of the amendments that we've talked about over the last couple months have included the time frame for resubmittals of rezoning requests and conditional use permits.
Would y'all take your conversations outside, please? Take your conversation outside, please. Thank you. All right, Cliff.
Thank you. So, as I indicated, we've talked about the resubmittal timeline for conditional use permits and rezoning requests that ultimately come before the Planning and Zoning Commission and City Council when it pertains to those individual requests. Many communities have a time frame in which, if you are denied, that you have to wait its cooling off period, so to speak, before you resubmit an application for a similar request. As a result, staff has evaluated that and looked at some neighboring communities, and based on experience, have seen where those timeframes do exist in many communities in terms of that resubmittal process. So as a result, staff is bringing to you and brought to the Planning and Zoning Commission text amendments to the reapplication timeframe, associated rezoning request and conditional use permits. Specifically, this would pertain to amendments of section 5.270, which is for the rezoning request, and section 5.470, which pertains to the conditional use permits. So what staff is recommending is the inclusion of section 5.270, adding verbiage that says no application for a zoning change, including the establishment of a planned development district for property which includes all or part of the same property, which is described in a previously denied application for a zoning change, shall be accepted by the department earlier than 1 year after the date of the final action prior to the application, unless the director of planning and building determines the use for which the new application is made is not the same or similar use to that of the proposed in the previously denied application. The director of planning and building determines that conditions relating to the property adjacent to the property, which was the subject of a previously denied application, have substantially changed, in which a six-month waiting period shall be imposed from the date of the final action of the City Council on the prior application until a new application could be filed. And then we also propose including a subsequent application provision in there that primarily addresses when an application is withdrawn. It would read, when an application has been withdrawn, an application for a zoning change, including the establishment of a planned development district, may be withdrawn at any time if the application has been advertised in compliance with the state law. An application requesting substantially the same rezoning request on all or part of the same described land shall not be required within 6 months. So that was section 5.270. We mirrored it, and there would be an amendment incorporating that into section 5.470, which addresses the conditional use permits as well. So I won't read that all in there again, but it's two sections of code. So why are we doing this? Obviously, when an application is denied, there's reason for it. There's findings of fact. Nothing has changed. Why does the applicant have the ability to just come back and just continue to, I don't know if the best word's burden, but burden everyone with a reconsideration of a request that's already been denied? If it's been denied, they have an appeal process. They should go to that next. The subsequent applications is in there because if an applicant is making an application and just isn't feeling comfortable with where it's going, they can't just say, well, I'm going to withdraw it and try it again next month. There's a cooling off period because neighbors are noticed. Neighbors have to come out. They have to be burdened by it. We think it's fair to allow them the opportunity to not be burdened by it. Continuous applications. This is not inconsistent with any other community. Actually, I think Mick's probably very familiar with this. This is basically a mirror of the Burning UDC. The other beauty of this is, as we move forward with our UDC, it's a pretty smooth transition to incorporate it into it. The one thing I do want to note, those provisions in there in allowing the director to determine that there may be some changes in circumstances. Say you have a change in a new comprehensive plan where every place type is different, like our first request today, and that's adopted a month after a request was made. Obviously, circumstances have changed, and it's a different consideration at that point. In addition, there may be some amendments on use changes, supplementary regulations that change that we can make the determination that it's a little bit different and it's eligible for a resubmittal. And if we deny it, then they can appeal that determination to the ZBA.
I appreciate the explanation and the rationale. My only concern was, is this a unique new provision? Because when people are trying to do good things that are compatible with the community, you don't want City Hall to be a red tape mud pit. So what you're telling me is this is fairly in line with other communities that are forward-thinking and ongoing and all that sort of thing. That's my concern. Mick, is that what you'd say? This is not unusual. Okay.
I was surprised when I got here it wasn't already here. Because every community I've ever been at, I've seen them up to 2 years.
Okay. So.
I have a question about refunds. Is that a common thing where people might want to withdraw and want their money back? And do we need to handle that in this or no?
No, refunds will not. Once you make an application, and ironically, that's something we may want to talk about in our, and it's, I don't know if it's the appropriate place, but we are going to be bringing some fee amendments to you. Maybe we add some verbiage in our zoning section that says, you're not eligible for a refund once you do.
It's like a theater ticket.
Hey,
what's going on right now, Jerry?
I don't think you're addressing that. The tree deal, is that another ordinance, or is that something that doesn't have to come before the city council?
So there are several amendments that are going to be coming before you as we move forward in the next month and a half. Some are directly associated with Appendix B, which is your zoning code. Some are in other sections of the code. I believe it's in your fee structure section. It's not part of the zoning code. Where I'm going with that, yes, they are. But some require us to take them to P&Z for recommendation before they get to you. Others allow us to bring it directly to you. So the tree preservation, most likely in the zoning code, will come before you, but it has to go to P&Z first.
Cliff, I'm so grateful that you're so passionate and knowledgeable and experienced in this because you're a great help to me. All right. I'll open a public hearing on this item. Anybody here for this? All right. I'll close the public hearing and go back into regular council.
I'll make a motion to approve Z2602.
I'll second.
A motion second to approve this. Further questions or discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you for your good explanations. It helps us. 7D is to consider possible action on the budget amendment, which I'm going to postpone until after we deal with 8C. So we'll go to 8A, which is to consider approval of an operating agreement with THC relating to a city-owned property near the intersection of US 290 and the Heritage Hills. And Chris Elliott, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mayor, Councilman. Hopefully I can figure out how to run this thing.
It's a mystery.
I got lucky on the first shot. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Chris Elliott. I'm the Chief of Historic Sites.
Go ahead and move the mic up if that'll be more comfortable for you. I'll hold it.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Elliott. I am the Chief Historic Sites Officer for the Texas Historical Commission. Commission. It is my responsibility for the successful operation and development of our 42 historic sites across the state of Texas. Today, I'm joined with Shannon Smith, the site director at Fort Martin Scott, and also Mr. Andy Bray from Mustard Architects. It's been a bit. We've been extremely busy building experiences all across the state of Texas, but I'll tell you one thing, this project has me really excited, mainly because we haven't done this before. It is something that is completely unique. It's unique to the industry. We see this happen with the science field and the STEM field, but we do not see this happen with the history. So without further ado, I'll kind of jump right into this. Uh-oh, now I broke it. Is there a
secret anybody telling them? I don't know. There you
go. Okay. This is what it was all based off of. Tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, and evolve me, I learn. I will give you a challenge. If you poll any independent school district right now, it could be elementary, middle school, high school, ask them what the three favorite courses are, and then ask them what their three least favorite courses are. I can guarantee you I could pick that list. You know, athletics, obviously, very popular. Science, also very popular. Shop, especially here in the Hill Country, very popular. Least popular? English, nobody likes English, right? Math, definitely. My daughter hates math. And believe it or not, history. And does anybody know why that is? Because they don't get to interact with it. And like I said, we built facilities, fantastic interactive facilities all across the state. And this facility is strictly going to be for the kids. Our chairman gave me a task to figure out how to get school districts to do field trips again. And that's a difficult thing. There's a lot of external factors that affect that. But we also need to provide a facility and a destination to where that becomes less of a factor. And I believe that this facility can do that. I'm going to keep, there we go. Y'all seen the slide before, Texas Untamed, a frontier experience. What this is to deliver is a space where we can bring schools to align it with TEKS and curriculum, but provide a space to where they get to interact. There's not a part of this that is held behind glass. We put a lot of our museums behind glass, tell kids not to touch, and then turn around in the same sentence and wonder why they're not interested in it. We're experiential learners. We're that from birth. And this is something that we're going to highly focus on with this facility. One of the things that we want to do is be able to have our kids engage with the animals, the creatures, the living history of our heritage. We see this every day. We could put an expensive $10,000 panel in front of a student, and the eyes just glaze over, but you stick a camel or a longhorn in front of them, all of a sudden it just opens up new imagination. And that's what we want to do. We want to provide a facility to where the weather isn't going to be a factor. The animals are trained to interact with the students so that they get a little bit more excited. This facility, like I said, is an indoor-outdoor facility, is what we'd like to design. That way, if the weather's great, we get them outside. This is not a replacement. What this is a replacement for an argument as to why schools couldn't go. It's going to be hot. It's going to be cold. It's going to be raining. Those are the things that we're trying to, satisfy through this project. Back to home ec, right? I don't know how many of y'all had home ec. I still remember it. Kids are starting to forget how we get vegetables, how we get meat, all that. We want to make sure that they are involved with it so we can partner with Matra Naturalist. The students can grow the vegetables, can be part of that production, but we're just not going to stop it there. We want to take it inside and do year-round operations, as well as plug it into our food waste programs, Dutch oven cooking, chuck wagon cooking, show the kids to actually what farm-to-table really means. A lot of these students think the vegetables are just provided by HEB and that's it, And we want to make sure that they understand that process through it. Vernacular architecture is a big part to the history of Fort Martin Scott and to the area. If you notice, Fort Martin Scott's facilities are all designed a little bit differently, built out of different materials. This was by design. As the military continued with westward expansion, they're looking at different ways to build these structures according to the landscape in which they were located. We are currently looking at partnering with companies such as Lincoln Logs and LACO to potentially build an exhibit where kids get to interact with the architecture and understand a little bit more about how the fort actually came to be. And not just this fort, other forts along the frontier as well. kids are engaged with Lego, right? If you're an adult, you stepped on one in the middle of the night. And if you had kids, it's just part of our culture. And I think it's going to be a unique experience for our students as we move forward. One of the issues that we have at a lot of our facilities is because most of them are remote, once we get them there, schools have a very limited time on that site before they have to turn around and leave. Lunch always causes that. If there's not a place and there's not food provided, that's a deciding factor for schools to leave. We don't want to do that. We want to make sure they stay on site as long as possible to get the experience that is needed. So having a concessionaire, having a way to be able to provide food and drink to students and to our community as well and to our public as well. I want to make sure that as I go through this presentation, this facility is to be used for kids. It is going to be for the students. This is unlike what we typically do. We target families and whatnot. The byproduct of this will be the families, but this is for the school group. Indigenous history is very important to us. You cannot tell the history of the Hill Country without talking about the Comanche and the Indigenous. It is a very vital part to our storyline. It's a very undertold story that we're working to amend. So I'm currently working with the Nation, so we have a tribal liaison within the agency to build a better relationship with the Comanche Nation. So hopefully in the future we'll have them partnering with us and telling their story as well as ours. Texas Rangers, again, can't talk about the Hill Country without talking about Texas Rangers. It is a vital part of our history. We're not here to replace that story. We want to expand that story. Camp Houston, was founded before Fort Martin Scott. You cannot talk about Fort Martin Scott without talking about Texas Rangers. And you can't talk about a lot of frontier forts without talking about the Texas Rangers. Very vital part of our history. This facility would be, again, a touch-all facility. If you can chew on it, you can bite it, you can break it. That doesn't matter to us. We will repair it. Mainly because the value that kids get by interacting with these things is irreplaceable. That is the most important thing, not what we're going to put in the building. Understanding the languages, it's going to be everywhere. Interpretation in this facility will be everywhere, whether it's on the trail, whether it's in the facility itself. Something as simple as a restroom sign that is spoken both English, German, as well as Comanche. I think those little subtle interpretive elements add to a more robust experience for the children. They can be smaller educational interpretive exhibits. Low tech is what we call them. A simple narrative to be able to. Here's the reality: kids will not listen to the actual text that they're being told, but they will listen to it in different languages just to see what it sounds like. That experience alone drives a larger interpretive experience. So to kind of sum it all up, we are super excited. Like I said, I have several multi-million-dollar projects going on all over the state of Texas, and this one by far excites me the most. We have the luxury of partnering with Mustard Architects early on. They have graciously decided to donate the conceptual phase of this project that leapfrogs us about six to eight months ahead of schedule. So, we're excited to start this venture with you.
I have some questions, but it really relates to the contract, so I guess that might be discussed a little later.
Okay. Let me get a public comment here from that signed up. And first, if you wouldn't mind stepping away, and there'll be probably more questions for your discussion here. Mr. Dooley, you've signed up to speak on this.
First and foremost, I want to know that I agree with this project. I would call your attention to the fact that page 71. Item number two, maintenance and operations.
Management and operations.
Management and operations.
There's
a clause in there.
Oh, somebody turned it off.
I could go on without.
Okay.
What book is that has been in operation, page 71, there's references there about allowing people from the city of Fredericksburg to gain additional. I would ask the director that you consider, and I don't know how you could verify either one, but I would ask you to consider changing that to just the city of Fredericksburg to the county. There are also a lot of who have donated money to the work like Scott, Ranger, Park property that live in the county but do not live in the city, and I would ask that you would consider that, please. Thank you.
Do you have a response?
This is for city taxpayers. That's why the intent was for the city of Fredericksburg residents, because it's people who pay taxes in the city to be able to gain access this for free.
So the people that donated money to the Ranger stuff that live in the county are not going to be considered?
I don't know how many there are and
I don't have
how much or anything like that. So this is the first time I've heard of that. But you bring up a good point.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll take that under advisement, yeah. Okay, Dr. Elliott, would you return? Mr. Klein has some contract questions, as do I.
Would you like to me to speak to that? Because I can speak to
sure,
that.
Sure, go ahead, if you like.
We have no desire to charge our local citizens for the history. Amending the agreement to include the county, I don't think the agency would have any issue with that. We can also offer discounts. There's things that we can do outside of that agreement to make sure that it's available for everybody in Gillespie County.
Well, as I've mentioned before, I'm the only one that probably was around, Gerald maybe, when the LBJ State Park was put in. And of course, we've known of the funding, and especially when the decease of the president and the first lady, that and I'm not sure what our state representative has done. And of course, it's only one person. I'm always concerned about us giving away property, period. And so I've got a question about, you know, and I think you're retiring, if I understand, which I don't blame you, but the point being is how do we know, and we don't really know, that there can continue to support the Fort Martin Scott in this part. And so that's a question I have in mind. It's any time we've got a government shutdown, it doesn't affect, I guess, the state, but yeah, it does affect the state. But the question I have, and I don't think you have an answer, nobody does, that when we're giving away property, and I see there's some lot of attorney
it's reversion clauses.
Sorry, I know there are some clauses in there. I just bring that to attention. And part of the deal is I know is where they're giving them 10 years to set up and work. Why would you give somebody 10 years to start operating? That sounds like a long time. I would sit there and say 3 years you ought to be running and going. And I realize, and I assume we got some funding this year from the last legislature. Of course, they won't be in session for another 2 years. But that concerns me that we put in 10 years in there to be operating. That ought to be shorter as far as I'm concerned.
Response?
Let me just touch on a few high points just for the audience benefit. So the idea with this contract, it's very similar to the city's transfer of the Fort Martin Scott site. So the city would transfer roughly 12 acres of the former Texas Ranger site to the state. Under the terms of the contract, they would have 3 years to develop the concept plan, or I guess the design plans, 7 years to obtain full funding for the project, and then, as Tony mentioned, 10 years to be operational. If any of those requirements aren't met, the city would, or the property itself would, revert back to city ownership.
And the term is 10 years?
10 years to be fully operational.
No, I mean 10-year term on the ownership subject to renewal.
Oh, it would be for forever. Unless
I don't like forever. Yeah, I don't like forever. There'll be generations that will be addressing this later?
Well, and within, once it's operational, I think it's 12 months. If at any point it shuts down for more than 12 months, there again, it would revert back to city ownership.
So, Garrett, is it 10 years after the 3 and the 7?
No.
It's hard 10 years.
All 10
years is the deadline to be operational.
Okay. And this allowance of years is impacted by legislative sessions and legislative funding processes.
That's correct. 2-year cycles for appropriations.
I would offer a different perspective as we think of our land, because this is the city residents' land. This is the people's land, and this is a way that we can serve families and young kids. I don't know about y'all, but this is what I hear most frequently, is there's nothing for kids to do here in this town. And this is an amazing...
I was born here. I heard that back there 60, 70 years ago.
Thanks for working on it, Tony. I think this is a great opportunity that we can utilize the land of the people and give something that's incredible.
I think it's the highest and best use for a building and a parking lot that is just sitting there empty and hasn't had any activity on it for months.
2 years. Probably 2 years.
For a while. Yep.
I agree with you. I think this is the best thing we can do for this property. And having dealt with Chris over this last year, I think it's to add this to the fort will make this probably their best venue, and it will address a lot of things that we need here in town. So I think it's great news.
Let me ask you a specific question on item 9, Fredericksburg's payment of cost. The city is agreeing to pay all taxes or impositions of any kind of system connection with our maintenance operation and other activities pertaining to Fort Martin Scott. That's and including all sales and other taxes on those project-driven maintenance operations. In other words, that's not your operation. That's anything we require. All right, and B, we're paying for the utilities. All charges for electricity, power, gas, oil, water, telecommunications, and utilities at Fort Martin Scott.
I was under the impression up until transfer.
I believe that's the intent, that we will pay the bills until the property is officially transferred.
Okay. And then we assume
we can clarify that.
Is it clarified in this contract?
We'll make sure it is.
Okay, thank you.
I don't think we've addressed that correctly.
Okay. I think Council, correct me if I'm wrong, it's what Garrett just described is the council's wish that this is bearing the cost until operation. Until operation.
Until the transfer of the property is complete.
Right. That's what I mean. Okay, I would prefer that we spell it out a little clearer. So I would vote for it today with that proviso. And then C is all costs for maintenance and repair for which we are responsible under this agreement. Can anybody point to me where under this agreement shows those responsibilities? Garrett, is there another?
No, sir. I mean, will y'all need any assistance?
No.
Okay.
Is there another?
So we'll clarify that as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, Garrett, I trust you to do that because I'm on a little bit of a high wire here about that. Like they say, what's in the pages of the contract is what it is. So I prefer that be spelled out a little clearer. Thank you for that direction. Okay. Any further questions or comments?
I have one more. And on the first page, in expectations, number one, in that second paragraph, I noticed that was struck out that I assume the city is supposed to pay for legal.
So the city will take care of the surveying, the subdivision, and the actual transfer documents. That's to prevent a conflict with the reversion clauses. That was a state comment. So,
well, the question I have is there a title policy issued on this?
Yes.
Well, that's quite costly. What's the agreed value that we come to? I say never. Usually, quite often, like I say, we're not getting anything for this except service, and I appreciate that. But the question is, we're paying quite a bit of closing costs here.
Well, it would be insurance, so that whenever it revert, if it were to revert back to us, that would be free and clear, and there wouldn't be a conflict.
Sorry, I have an opinion on insurance, so My deal is we've got a lot of costs here, and that consideration from the point of us giving them this property. I don't have a problem with us doing this. That's the point. I'm just trying to make sure the city doesn't have spent too much money in giving somebody some land.
That was just a comment from THC's attorneys that the city actually needed to take care of that, else they created a conflict.
Makes sense to me.
And then while we're talking about changes, so one of their changes from the version that's in the packet, I handed out copies to the council, but section 3 has been revised, just the wording to ensure that the statement is a mutual promise between the parties. I think the state attorneys felt like it was one-sided. So Mick has reviewed that change and agreed with it.
Mike, do you have any comment? Okay, let you about to say something. All right. Tony, I'll just go on record as saying, and I understand the reticence to ever give up property, not only that's unique to this culture, but unique to people in Texas in general. And as Council Lady Kirshner stated about it being public property, but we're the stewards of those decisions right now. I understand that about giving it away, in other words, conveying it. However, my view is instead of what? Because the city does not have a long-term plan for that, and we are continuing to try to find ways to leverage our ownership of property to the betterment of the community in the long run. And sometimes when you have to do contracts with people, there are things you wish, well, a little bit different. But the Texas Historical Commission has my trust at this point. I've talked with Mr. Bell quite a bit. I'm confident that they not only have the passion, but also the wherewithal to convince legislators to continue to support this. I think the right people are in place at the time right now for that piece of property. So I will say that I agree with you that it gives me a little turn too, but there's nothing we could propose to do on this that would have this kind of result that's not going to be coming with some risks. So that's where I am today.
Let me ask again, is there a value reach as far as the title policy yet? Mick, do you know? What is the value that we're buying?
We don't know.
I mean, it could be. Because that, and it is normal for the seller to pay for these fees. I don't have a problem with that. I've been in this business long enough to know that. But my concern is that we are getting something, but I'd like to hear what the cost is really us giving it.
We don't know it. Looking or thinking back to the Fort Martin Scott property, I believe that was done for a total less than $5,000.
Okay. Well, that's reasonable. And I just want to make sure it's not a
$50,000. As far as benefits go, I believe THC's plan is for that to become the main entrance to Fort Martin Scott. Councilmember Washington mentioned it, but that would be a safe access point. Right now, there is some concern with the driveway. So, again, now it's a signalized intersection, so it'll be much safer.
All right, let's move this.
I move that we approve the operating agreement with the Texas Historical Commission relating to city-owned property near the intersection of U.S. 290 East and Heritage Hills Drive.
Second. I have a motion and a second to approve the contract. Would you agree to add to your motion the provisos that I instructed here to make sure that they're correct? All right. Any further questions or discussions about the motion? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Shannon.
It's been a long road. We look forward to a longer road with you.
Thank you, Garrett, for all your work on this.
Yes,
you know, you've been
and me. Okay, let's go to 8B, which is to consider approval of an agreement between the city and Pignalis Creative Arts Alliance for design and construction of a Glockenspiel at Marktplatz. Mike Zenner, you're on the agenda. You're up to speak.
Mr. Mayor.
You want to take a break?
No. Our friend Mr. Tribes has repeatedly corrected many of us in town.
Glockenspiel. Okay, sorry.
Glockenspiel.
However you say it, it's a big tall thing with moving figures and a clock. Okay. Go ahead, Mark.
So just think of it with a U instead of the O.
Okay.
Glockenspiel.
Okay.
As you spoke about the long road, I thought it was interesting because that's sort of how I was going to start my little spiel today. One of my favorite songs written by Paul McCartney is the long and winding road.
Yes.
And that is where we are in this project. when you think that the idea in its infancy started in 2014. So here we are 12 years later, and the amount of work that this committee has put into this project has just been phenomenal. So I guess one of the things that I've learned and come to appreciate is the history of our community. And I guess to recognize how important Market Plats is to our community and preserving our community's history. Decades of work by some people, some on our committee. But history is more than something that's in the past. It's something that we celebrate today. Thus, on our slide, Fredericksburg's Glockenspiel Tower, where history comes to life. So today, we're going to make history with the review and approval of this project, which has been some 12 years in the making. So the contract that everyone has had a chance to review is pretty standard between the Market Plats and Glockenspiel and the city, written by a great attorney because there's multiple whereases. So we know that it's a good contract. The meat of the contract is in sections A and B. And section A deals really with all aspects of the construction of the project and the improvements. A lot of this section deals with the requirements of PCAA and the relationship that we have with the contractors. We've had our attorney review this contract, and we've actually been using it, I'm going to say, as a roadmap, as we've been dealing with our contractor of choice in Charleston, South Carolina, and discussions with local contractors. So this is, you know, no new news. We've been looking at this, and everyone can comply with Section A. Section B is also kind of where the rubber meets the road and where we're at today, which is the funding and the approval of the project on behalf of the city. Parts of this contract dealt with PCAA's partnership in the project with the city and the Market Square redevelopment, and that we would lead the fundraising efforts on this project. And as such, Pernellis Creative Arts has already contributed $400,000 to this project. And as of this morning, we stand at $1,260,000 raised towards this project.
Is that including the city's contribution?
It does not include the city's contribution. So we're kind of excited to be here. With the contract approval, this is going to allow this project to move forward, because one of the parts of the contract that we felt was very important was that we achieved the 80 percentile mark. And with $1,260,000 that we've raised to date, with the city's contribution towards the project, Market Square Commission's contributions, and the fact that we have just begun seeking funding from area foundations, we see this as, say, the stepping stone that's going to allow us to sign the contract with Christoph Foundry in Charleston, South Carolina, because we will have achieved the 80 percentile mark. Just point of reference, the contract with Christoph Foundry is for $1,442,000. That is for the steel infrastructure of the tower. It deals with all the bells, the 38 bells that are cast in Belgium, all the electronics, everything that's going to create the sound is being contracted to them. We interviewed four companies, two in Germany, two in the U.S., and they were our choice. I guess the other thing that was key in Section B was that the city delegated PCA the authority to manage the construction of the project. And again, we've got a terrific committee. I've got an architect on this committee. We've got an engineer on this committee. We've got an ex-mayor and city councilman on this committee. We've got the head of our Oktoberfest effort. So we've got talent on this committee that's bringing this project to bear. Section C deals with the license for Pernellis Creative Arts Alliance and its construction. It allows for oversight with the director of Parks and Rec Department. I know Andrea has already seen the 12-month construction schedule as provided by Christoph in Charleston, South Carolina. They're very much aware that they probably don't want to be here on site October, November, December. We have a lot of things going on in the park. So as we would approve this contract, it will allow them to begin work off-site in Charleston with the idea that then they would come to Fredericksburg first quarter of next year and this project would be completed in the first quarter of 27. Believe it or not, when this is all said and done, Herndon Alice Creative Arts Alliance is going to donate this project to the city. Is that incredible or what?
That's okay. Great.
So that's part of the contract. And of course, there's indemnification clauses and miscellaneous provisions. So what I'd like to do is show you the aspects of the Exhibit A, which is, this is the location. And this was also part of a long and winding road. There were multiple locations that were considered in the park. And I think after a lot of thought, a lot of effort, a lot of angst, this was the site that was chosen. I think we had a myriad of people, 12 to 15 people, spent an hour and a half in the park. And I think there were two real drivers that led us to this point. One was the noise from Main Street. Okay, the whole idea here is that we're going to have a glockenspiel bell tower that is going to be providing music interludes two or three times a day with a show with the historical puppets or figurines. And the longer we stood out closer to Main Street, the more we began to recognize, you know, hearing these bells may be a challenge. I think the other aspect was just call it construction access. And this location back towards Austin Street is going to give us greater construction access for both Christoph Foundry and our local contractor. We've got a couple of slides that give you an idea of what the glockenspiel is going to look like within Marketplatz. So that's kind of an aerial view from Main Street. There's a great view. Close up, we've done I want to give credit to Brandon Weinheimer this year. We've tried to create something that is really going to be historic, and we've really worked on the limestone and the grout work, if you will. We know we still have to get in front of the historical review board. But as an example, when we started on this project, we were talking about a standing seam metal roof. Well, we're like, that's nothing historical about that, okay? And so yet, when you look at the old bank building on Main Street, you look at the church steeples at Zion and Holy Ghost, and they have that kind of pressed shingle metal roof look. And that's the kind of thing we want to bring to this tower and to this project. So there's a final view from Austin Street and how the tower would look within Marketplatz. And you can see that we're creating a 2,000 square foot plaza at the base of the tower. And then maybe one final comment, because it's kind of run through the course of the presentations and the history and the involvement of the youth in our community. One of the reasons we love this project so much is that we will have the ability to plug a keyboard into the glockenspiel. And as you guys already know, PCA sponsors the musical evenings in the park during the summer months. And what we're thinking is we could sandwich a spring and fall bell concert that would be played with the keyboard. So again, an opportunity to get the youth from maybe the middle school or high school involved. So that's an overview of the project. And I think, again, our effort to keep Vereinskirchen at the utmost and top priority in terms of height. We did not want the glockenspiel to extend higher than the VK, if you will. And the reason 45 feet was imperative is in dealing with the companies that were giving us proposals, it was the only way we could have a stage with moving figurines, bells, and clocks. So we wanted all four of these things because that is what our German history has. That's what is in the old country, and that's what we wanted, and the authenticity drove us to the 45 feet. That's all I have. Again, I'd just like to thank my committee. They've done tremendous work. I'd also like to thank Cardinalis Creative Arts Alliance Board for their support of this project.
So will the bells play the long and winding road?
The bells, that's the beauty. I know Andrea doesn't have any expansion of her workload, and talking with the PCA board, the Glockenspiel Committee will evolve from its current role of fundraising and driving this project to reality, to where we would create four people that would assist Andrea in the musical offerings. And so maybe the music is changed monthly, maybe it's changed every other month, quarterly, whatever the city would like, but we will have a committee that will work with Andrea because she's got enough on her plate.
Mike, would you, just for the record, confirm that with the implications of the location, and I know there are lots of discussions about the location, that one of the main concerns of this particular location was that it would be compatible with the larger festivals that we hold, particularly Oktoberfest. You can say that the people who organize and do the Oktoberfest have approved this site.
I believe I can. Debbie, what do you think?
Okay.
All right.
I just wanted to say on the record that that this will be compatible with the already monstrous use of that park.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Mike before he steps away?
I have a couple questions about the agreement. Is it okay if I ask you? I'm curious, who's going to pay for the removal of the arbor between Edelsbrine Hall and the Oktoberfest Hall?
It would be part of the project. I mean, it'll be part of the overall cost of the project.
Okay. And then
probably the local contractor, it would come under that umbrella.
Okay. And then I see in the contract, it's, I think, up to 2 years of maintenance bond, or kind of a
warranty,
thank you, Pittsburgh. So if something happens, that the city is then responsible after 2 years?
Yes. There's a two-year, soup-to-nuts warranty from Christoph Foundry in Charleston, South Carolina. However, they also have a maintenance team. And so if we have any issues, and I realize Charleston is not next door here to Fredericksburg, but their commitment is that they would be on site within 2 weeks to address any issues. But they also would plan to work with city department personnel and get them trained and on various aspects of the figurines or the bells or whatever, so maybe they can do some local troubleshooting. And as part of our original proposal and information from Christoph is normal maintenance cost expectations would be around $3,500 per year.
And then on the construction, I think you said 12 months total, but that includes time in at their factory?
Correct. If we move forward with this approval here today, I've also spoken with the Cardinalis Creative Arts Alliance Board and their president. This would allow us to then sign the contract with Christoph. I talked with Stan Christoph yesterday. And they would begin work as soon as they got their first payment and the signed contract. And this 12 months is perfect in terms of if you think of the use of the park, right? Because they can begin their work off-site, so let's say April 1st. They can do their behind-the-scenes work, get the bells going, the electronics, and then come here January, February, March of next year. That allows our local contractor to get the foundation in place. They may want to do some core samples so they know more about what the foundation that's needed. But all of that is in play, if you will. Again, Tim Krenwelge, Brandon, and Blair and Evans, and Andy interviewed four contractors, and that took an entire day, and we've done some follow-ups. We've zeroed in on a local contractor that would work hand in glove with Christoph out of Charleston.
Thank you. I'm just, my concern is for the construction site because that's a heavy traffic area and making sure, since it's a public park that's open all the time, that we're
safe about it.
Clearly, it would have to be fenced in during that area. And that's why we, you know, we're just like, we're not going there in the fall, right? That's what all the festivals are and high rate of use. But I think after the holidays, there's a nice window there before festivals begin. And so that would be the window we'd be shooting for. And Andrea, trust me, will be very involved in the 12-month layout of the work as it gets involved with the park.
Thank you.
Anything else for Mike? Thank you, Mike.
Oh, I just have a question. I know Wayne is retired from taking care of the facility. Have we replaced him, or what's the case there, Andrea? That's an important part of this square.
Who retired?
Our gardener, Wayne Martin, he retired earlier this year. So we have adjusted the job description, and it's been out now for about 3 weeks. We have one applicant so far, but we're looking to get more applicants before we do interviews and have that position replaced. The parks crew is handling it for now.
Okay. So all of the landscape management becomes part of the park?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Anything else, Council? Yes. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your presentation. I'll take a motion if y'all are ready. Oh, sorry. Eric. Sorry, Eric.
Mayor, good morning, Mayor, members of the Council. I think that before we make a vote on spending $400,000 of hot funds, and then continuing to be obligated for thousands of dollars of maintenance out of taxpayer funds, not hot funds, for an indefinite period of time, we gotta ask ourselves why. Why are we building this in the first place? And secondarily, is it appropriate use of hot funds? The closest I came was in the third whereas clause of the contract. It says, whereas the construction of the Glockenspiel contributes to the historical restoration of the market. Carol and I had the opportunity when we were living in Europe to visit the oldest Glockenspiels in Germany, the one in Munich and the one in Rothenburg. We think of Glockenspiels today as towers with bells that you can play various songs on, you can put figurines up there. The oldest one in Germany is the one in Munich. It was built in 1908. The second oldest one was built in Rothenburg in 1910. Not a single person came to Fredericksburg between 1846 and 1910 had ever seen a Glockenspiel, but they didn't exist. What they had seen was bell towers and churches. And so when they built the Vereinskirche, that little coffee mill on the top, that was a bell tower. And that bell is actually over in Holy Ghost. It's still here. So we're not actually doing historical restoration because there never was a Glockenspiel here. And none of the people who moved here had ever seen anything like that. If you'll recall, at the last meeting, when you were considering hot funding, the Lone Star Heritage application was denied for several reasons. It wasn't historic restoration of an existing structure. It wasn't marketing for some event that was coming up. It wasn't an art or a music event that we were paying for. It wasn't a sporting event. And there was no way to be able to determine how many heads and beds came here in order to see a particular sign or structure. How's this any different? This is not a historic restoration. It's not marketing. It's not advertising for whatever's going on around here, which is how we find marketing. It's not a musical event or a sporting event. It's not an art event. And there is absolutely no way to determine that you're putting heads in beds, that people came to Fredericksburg to see the Glockenspiel, and they decided to spend the night. So the question I've got is, why is this? Councilmember Klein said he was concerned about committing the city to significant funding requirements, as you were talking about the former Texas Rangers property. This is exponentially more money, and it's forever.
You've had your 3 minutes. Thank
you very much. I appreciate the time.
Mick, is there any issue with the use of this for hot money for this?
No, sir. Okay.
Anybody want to directly respond to Mr. Harris? Dr. Harris? Okay.
I was just concerned that I think it's a marketing and certainly is advertisement. It may not be an immediate draw, but someday I would suspect that that would be so. Just from that point, I appreciate your opinion.
All right. Ready to move it? Or not?
So the issue is to accept an approval with agreement between the City of Fredericksburg, Cardinalis, or PCAA, for design and construction of the Gluckenspiel and Market Plots. I make that motion.
Second.
So a motion is second to approve the agreement as is written and committing the funds to the project as is in the contract. Further discussion or questions?
Only had a question. Wasn't Market Square Development going to make a presentation and with their donation?
We have to approve this first.
Okay.
All right, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Now we'll pop back to D. Okay, 7D. Consideration of possible action on budget amendment and more ordinance relating to a request from the MSRC for use of unallocated funds for the G-Spiel project. Oh, damn. So we almost got you after 2 hours. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah. All right. I want to first thank the mayor and council members for your vote. And I get to follow after Mike Zinner. I mean, today is an exciting moment. And as you know, it's a partnership. It's a partnership between the city, Fredericksburg, the PCA. Let me start out. Rephrase that. The PCAA for leading the charge on this Glockenspiel. They met with us, the Market Square Redevelopment Commission, and we were behind the idea. We brought it to you, and now you have invested in it also. So I want to thank y'all for that. As you know from the contract, we all initially said a commitment of $400,000, and the Market Square Redevelopment committed to raising $400,000. And we would formally like to request that the city, the city has about $133,000 left in the food and wine fund that when the Market Square Redevelopment Commission used to hold that. And we would like for y'all to ear tag $125,000 of that. And then we have left about $56,000 from the John Klein meeting room from our last fundraiser. And we would like to commit $50,000 for a total of $175,000. On our commitment of the $400,000.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have a question. Why don't we just give the entire balance? Instead of $175,000, the balance in both of those is $190,841.17. Is there a reason we need to hold on to that extra $15,000?
Our comment on that would be just in case you have started Food and Wine Fest again.
Amen, brother.
Say that again.
Just in case you have to take over the Food and Wine Fest again, and we could give 5 years to look at that.
Okay, and the same with the Klein Room?
And then the Klein Room, we have funds that come in that people just donate to the Mark Plotz Fund through the Community Foundation, so we don't want to take that fund down completely to zero.
So the request is still at 175. Any other comments, questions? All right.
Mayor, this is an ordinance, a budget amendment ordinance, so a public hearing will be required.
Oh. Okay.
Will I be able to come back?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So I'll open a public hearing on this item because it is a budget amendment. All right, close the public hearing and go back into regular session. Any further questions, discussion items with Mr. Krenwogi? Any further stop, comment? Tim, you good? Okay.
I move we approve ordinance 2026-06 to approve amendments to the city budget.
Second.
Motion second. Any further discussion or questions?
One quick comment. So there's an ordinance approval And then there's also a reallocation of the John William Klein funds. That's not an ordinance. That's not a budget amendment. It's just approval of the reallocation.
Okay.
I think you can combine them into one.
Okay. I modify my motion to include the John Klein reallocation. Thank you.
Second.
I'll second that.
Chris, that was it? Okay. Are we good on your end with that motion? All right. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you all for your good work on that. Appreciate all that. You bet.
I'm excited right now. So I have to tell the council, I've been talking for several months to Michael Barr, and I met with him extensively last Friday to get him on board. And we talked almost 2 hours, and he agreed that he's enthusiastically going to join our subcommittee on this Glockenspiel. And what I really asked him about is to help us write the narratives for our figurines. And I want to announce to y'all that every figurine will be tied to a historical person in our past. I remember when we first started this years ago, and I was meeting with Anna Hudson, and she said, well, we got to carry this history forward. I hope y'all will do that. And there's, we all know about Nimitz, and we have his bust, and we've got Johnson, and we have his bust in the history wall. She says, bring forth some of the histories of the people in our community that will represent through these figurines. And so we are committed, the subcommittee, to doing that. Everyone will be a historic deal. So I want to, now, before I tell you anything, we have it finalized, and it will come to y'all for the final approval of the characters. But when I started talking to Michael, I said, Michael, we want in the Glockenspiel to be a bronze with your definition of Gemächlichkeit. Okay? I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to read a little bit of it. Gemächlichkeit is one of those unique German words that has no precise English equivalent. Gemächlichkeit is a complex component of German social life. It goes to the heart of what it means to be German. I have heard Gemächlichkeit defined as that warm, friendly feeling that comes as a natural effect of social evening spent in the company of family and friends. It's about beer, food, laughter, and conversation. It is the love of celebrations and the German way of life. Another way of putting it is that Gemächlichkeit is a state of mind in which the mute, the inner person, is satisfied. Whatever contributes to that state is Gemächlichkeit. So, he agreed we could use all words, and he's going to cut down his thing. So I think that's beautiful, okay? Now, I gave him some of the names that we have decided are going to use, and y'all may have heard some of them, like Herman Lehman and his 9 years with the Indians. And after I met with him, I had to go. First of all, I said, y'all all have his book? Hill Country Hindsight. Well, I bought one and I gave it to Andy Guevara, and he said he couldn't put it down until he read the whole thing, and he kept asking his wife that whole weekend. Well, that's what happened to me. And after I met with him, I had to go reread some of it. And I said, Michael, there's some stories that you've written that have been in looking back in the Fredericksburg paper that I don't see in the book. He says, yeah, I don't have all of them. I said, okay. So we talked about a couple of them that aren't in the book, and who knows? The committee's going to decide.
But, Tim, I admire your passion.
Yeah. Can I call? You want me to shut up? Yeah. Okay. I have one other thing I want to say. Okay. Now, Eric, I tell you, I know what his comments were, but I need Eric. Eric, I ran into Eric about a year and a half ago. And he said, hey, you know, with Fort Martin Scott, I was complimenting him on the 175th anniversary of Fort Martin Scott. And he said, there has to be some soldiers that came back and came into this community. And I told him about an Alexander McDougal. And so that he came back, and that afternoon he sent me this beautiful email, and he looked him up and said, yes, that he came back and married this German girl in the Bryan's character. Okay. Now, I ended up last year after talking to him going to their 100th anniversary or their family reunion, and it's a remarkable book. One of Alexander's daughters ended up marrying a Klanner. Who is Smokey Klanner and Hugo Klanner? So guess what? That tuba player that we say is that figurine that's going to dance, it's going to be either Smokey or Hugo. And we have other characters like that. So I am so excited. You can tell I'm shaking because we're going to tie this. And Eric, I need your help. We're going to tie those soldiers at Fort Martin Scott to the history of some very interesting. So well, thank you.
Well done, Tim. Well done. That's a demonstration of the Fredericksburg spirit. Thank you.
I remember, remember, Tim, they do have to be deceased.
Council, you want to go ahead or you want to break? You want to just absent yourself on, yeah, here. On, I see. On personal, or you want to go ahead and take a full break, or you have a preference? All right, we're going to take, okay, Mike?
Just very quickly, we're still in the fundraising mode. FKG.com, we need you.
All right, Mike, thank you. All right, we'll recess for 5 minutes or so. resuming. I'm waiting on Mr. Klein. Wait just a couple more minutes for Mr. Klein. All right, we'll resume. We're at 8C, which is to consider approval of the contract with the Gillespie County Elections Administrator for joint election services for the city. The general election to be held on May the 2nd. Ms. Vasek?
Yes, sir. Mayor and Council, this, if you recall, last year, staff was directed to seek the contract with the Gillespie County Elections Office. And this contract before you does just that. It will contract all election services to Gillespie County Elections Office. If you notice the exhibits, a lot of them are not completed because they are to be determined. Now that we have the last day of filing, we will know how to proceed with the amounts that go into that exhibit, and we will work with Jim on filling that in. This is a joint election, by the way, as you're aware, and that is with the Fredericksburg Independent School District, which will be a cost savings for the city and the school since we are both paying our pro rata share of all the costs. And the last thing I wanted to mention was all early voting and all election day voting will be held there at the Gillespie County Elections Office.
Carol Hemerson has signed up to speak on this. Okay. Okay. All right. Questions of Letty? Or comments or questions? Or discussion? Or moving?
I move to approve the contract with Gillespie County Elections Administrator for the joint election services for the city's general election on May 2nd.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve this. Before I call the vote, Annette, did you want your comments submitted for the record? Did you do that for the city secretary? Okay. All right. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
You opposed? Motion carries. 8D, consider selection and approval of Kinley Horn to assist the city in the development of a UDC and authorizing the manager to negotiate a contract up to $175,000. Cliff?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. And I know everybody's excited today about several things, but as a staff, we're extremely excited that we're to this point. And the fact
amazing.
That we've done a lot of things. The comprehensive plan is in place. We're talking about a strategic plan, but now we're in a position to move forward with our key regulatory document, which is our UDC, that will make us more efficient as we move forward. So we're here today to ask for your consideration of the consultant that will help lead that process and that project. Just a little bit of a background. As you know, we put a RFQ out in late, I believe it was November, accepted responses to mid-December. We received, and to our surprise, we received 13 responses, which is a high number of responses. And a majority of those consultants were very well qualified. We were extremely pleased by the response that we got. We got national respondents as well. But we, as a staff, we evaluated them, did a scoring system as identified in your staff report. We primarily looked at five rating criteria of the to evaluate them. One was the completeness and clarity of the submittals. We wanted to make sure that we have a consultant that understands the community and the state. We wanted to look at experience, knowledge, and reputation. We also evaluated past performance on similar projects and the planning approach and timeline. So based upon that, we rated them individually and came to an average score for each of the 13. We thought that it would be best to bring to you the top four at this time that we believe are the most qualified at this point and meet our needs. And like I said, a majority of them could have done this. We were not discounting any of them, but just the fact that we evaluated references, past experience with the city, and quite honestly, we wanted to see a firm that's worked with a UDC from start to finish and not rewriting them or whatever else. So based upon that, our top four recommendations to you as a staff was Kim Lee Horn. They came in at a 91.4. Half came in at an 89.8. Kendi Keese came in at 89.7. And Friesen Nichols came in at 89.30. So that was our recommendation. So based upon that, we believe the top recommended firm of Kim Lee Horn is the best fit at this time. As you indicated, we have $175,000 budgeted in the budget for this at this time. Now, that's not to say that in the future, as another thing that's factored with our consultant is, how do we move forward if we have to phase that? So that's something that we're going to have to talk to them about as we move forward, as well as potential grants that could help supplement additional costs. So that was something we looked at as well. So based upon that and the ranking, we are recommending Kim Lee Horn have the ability, and for City Manager Bailey, to negotiate a contract up to $175,000 to start the UDC process. One thing I will note, we're going to be very strict when we do that to make sure it's clearly spelled out what the requirements and what the responsibility of the consulting firm is, because you can get the prettiest RFQ and less staff and the city force them to follow exactly what we need. That's something that we really need to make sure we stay on top of. So based upon that, we are recommending Kim Lee Horn and the ability for City Manager Bailey to negotiate and enter into a contract.
How is that funded? Is it?
It was a line item under the Planning Department, Development Services.
Yeah, what I'm asking is timing on it. Is it half or down or five?
That's something we would have to negotiate in the contract at that point.
Okay.
Clearly, we want performance before payment as we get down the road, but there will be, I'm sure, a seed money to start the process.
Is this budgeted?
It is.
Let me ask.
Is it budgeted at that number?
It is.
Okay.
It's actually under 0127501500.
You're amazing.
Let me ask you, what exactly do we expect out of this?
Well, a regulatory document, but quite honestly, a final document that really consolidates all of our development regulations and codes to make us more efficient and, quite honestly, consistent. And for us as a staff and you as a council, more accountable to you and the ability to report that to you. And to bring items to the P&Z and applicable committees that may need to rewrite the ship a little bit in terms of these are some changes in the dime, so these are some changes in the code. And it provides us a regulatory document to move forward with a roadmap called the Comprehensive Plan.
Do you have any idea how long ago we ever did this?
We have never done a UDC.
I'm not trying to take credit for this, but I looked it up, and it's 3 years ago this month I met with the city of Bernie to find out what a UDC was and why we needed it and how awesome it will be once we are finished with it and how it makes everything align. So that's warm fuzzies. Maybe we'll talk to Bernie again.
That's why we have Flip.
Right.
So I do have a budget question. So I remember 175 for the fiscal year, correct? But we only have 7 months left in this fiscal year. Do we expect to expend all of that? Because we're not getting a full year's worth of service.
If we don't, it'll carry over. And again, that'll be part of the negotiation. We'll take a look at their plan to move forward with developing this. But if we don't, that will carry over.
Thank you.
Into next year.
I would like to add that Emily, I was a city attorney during Bernie's trouble. I think the same professional in Warren.
That's a name I'm familiar with in my years as mayor for several times that we've used it in the city. Yeah.
And that's one thing we looked at, consistency of the firm, and specifically the project management lead of the firm is very important.
Appreciate your work on that bid and making that presentation. Any other questions or you want to move?
If the representatives are Kinley Horn are here, we apologize that you had to wait so long.
Is y'all Kinley Horn? Oh, welcome. Yeah.
You want to say anything?
So, yeah.
I'll be very good. I just wanted to say, my name is Ethan Harwell. I'm a planner with Kinley Horn. I'm here tonight on behalf of Carissa Cox, who is unable to be here, but she's that professional y'all keep referencing from her. Our team's really excited to come work with Fredericksburg, not only because it's Fredericksburg, and who's like to spend the day in Fredericksburg, but also just I have found in my professional life as a staff planner and working with developers at UDC, it's really a tool that sets expectations, helps align expectations, helps decision makers make the decisions like you had to make earlier today as you considered those rezoning cases. So we're excited to come work with you guys and engage with this team. Happy to answer questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you for being here. Appreciate it. So we'll count, you've been here an hour and 22 minutes. We'll count that to be $5,000. Okay, you want to move?
Sure. I move we approve. You ready?
Go ahead.
Move we approve Kimley Horn to assist the city in the development of a unified development code and a contract up to $175,000 for the initial phase.
Second.
Motion is second as stated. Questions or comments? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Oh, all opposed? Motion carries unanimously. All right, city managers. Oh, we have future. Oh, sorry, Cliff. I'm sort of brain fried now. Clinton, I'm sort of brain.
Yes, sir.
Let me stop again.
Mayor, I understand.
Okay, let's stop. Coffee. Clinton, I'm sort of brain fried. You have a report?
Yes, sir. I get the easy part this morning. March 3rd, council meeting coming up. We have recognition of Brink Stead's. Oh, no, nothing under city manager.
Okay, future report, agenda.
Sorry about that. Sorry. Jumping right to the March 3rd meeting. Recognition of Frank Stead's retirement. Frank's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I think I joked that he'd been around for 91 years, most recently filling the interim emergency management coordinator position. So he's done a great job for us. We'll recognize him. We have a right-of-way release for East Orchard Street. Cliff, I don't know if you want to add anything on that. Along with a building code fee structure amendments, both of those.
Just to clarify, the reason we're going ahead and doing that is because the building code and fee structure is not a type of regulation to be with the UDC. So we're trying to do those amendments there on an annual basis to keep them up to par.
Thank you. Festival Road closure. This is a new request for Warehouse Road, Maker's Market on Lincoln Street. I think everyone's familiar with that. And then a quarterly update from EDC by Tim. March 17th, Garrett. Well, we'd be in the new chambers March 17th. I hate to put you on the spot and ask you that.
No, again, the plan is March 3rd. Y'all can see we're starting March to 3rd, move out of this space. So March 3rd, we will be in the new space.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Sure.
March 17th.
Hey, let me back up on that storm ready that the commissioners did discuss that and that the state has provided funding for that. And, of course, it's a plus for everybody out here. Mm-hmm. And it's regards back to the July 4th flooding.
Yes, sir. So on March 17th, as Tony mentioned, designation of storm ready from the National Weather Service. Sounds like the county's also pursued that. Ordinances for the location of SOBs, vape and tattoo shops, and gaming parlors. Flip anything to add there?
No, those would just be identifying locations in underlying zoning districts and supplementary regulations.
Earlier in the year, we had a discussion regarding a fee for brush and leaf collection. Council had tabled that for March 17th. That is a tabled item that we'll bring back to the council and discuss a couple of options for moving forward that the council is interested.
I did request that an item on March 3rd agenda be the reconsideration of a couple of hot applications.
Yes, sir. Thanks for reminding me. That will also be added, Mayor, and we did get your email on that, okay. The two applications. That will be on the 3rd. Upcoming events and meetings. We have a next Citizen University class coming up. City Attorney, City Secretary presenting February 24th, regular meeting on March 3rd, and then coffee with the City Manager on March 11th.
Questions or comments about the future agenda?
Right of the ROW release on East Orchard. Can you?
Yes, sir. So a year or so ago, maybe, I believe, we had a situation where a structure was built into the right-of-way. It was actually being sold. The house was being sold at that time. And the title company obviously wouldn't release title without that exception until City Council acted on that, basically acknowledging releasing some right-of-way. So the next-door neighbor has a very similar situation. The house isn't for sale, but I think they just want to clean that up. So the structure is built, the porch is built just within the right-of-way. So Kendra Pesek at Hill Country Titles, or attorney Kendra Pesek, is actually working with that client to prepare the documents. So we'll explain it in the staff memo, okay. But certainly happy to answer any questions. It's really just a cleanup item.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Anything else? All right. Council, we're at the end of the fulfilling the agenda. Any further comments or closing comments or closing comments? You good? We are adjourned. Thank you.